The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
I'm Beth Morrie, and this is One Torn Every Minute, the podcast where we talk about giving birth. Today, I'm joined by one of the nation's favourite broadcasters, Jane Garvey. Jane, thank you so much for agreeing to be a guest on my show. I hope I don't instantly make you regret it when I ask, can we run a gloved finger around your cervix?
Oh my God.
By summarising how many times you've given birth and when.
Okay, I have got two daughters, one born in the final weeks of the 20th century, so December 1999, and the other one born in February of 2003, so two.
2003. So I wouldn't ordinarily ask you to choose a favourite child, but I'm going to this time.
Okay.
And I want you to choose your favourite birth. Us to talk about. We'll delve into the other one, but I like to focus on one.
Favourite birth. This one outraged. I can't make it. Because my daughters are quite competitive about this, to the degree that, for example, with security codes and passwords, I have to divide them evenly.
Oh, yeah, I do that naturally. I obviously mean the worst birth, really. What's the most gruesome and terrible and traumatic one that we can discuss? I mean, I don't know whether they'd be happy with knowing that.
Well, no, I think one of the benefits of having daughters, actually, if you're a mom, you do get the chance to talk a lot to your daughters about birth. Mm. And I think it's actually rather useful. It's good to relive these moments. I don't know, because I haven't got sons, I don't know whether women with sons are allowed to have those conversations to the degree that I've had with my children, because obviously they are interested because they're thinking they might go through it too, so they'd quite like to know about it.
Oh, well, my sons are interested because it's talking about poo and bums, so they're really keen. They want to know about coming out my front bottom all the time.
Yes, well, my children didn't come out of my front bottom. So
no, caesareans. We love the diversity of birth on this show.
Okay, well, the reason I can't distinguish between the births, although there was one funny thing about my first birth, which I will talk about, is that they were both elective caesareans. So there was no drama, I have to say, in the actual delivery room, thank goodness. I was incredibly well looked after by the NHS at Queen Charlotte's Hospital in West London. And I've no complaints about the operating theatre at all. I think like a lot of women, some of the aftercare was a little variable. I'll be honest with you. And I think sometimes we don't talk honestly enough about just how variable it can be. And also, if like me, you've had rather a fortunate life, you know, my mum and dad are very nice people. I wrote them off there for a second. I was well looked after and nurtured and lots of good treatment. I was a bit surprised to discover that sometimes in maternity hospitals, the people there can be a little brusque. I know they're busy,
we've all encountered this.
Okay.
Variations. Can I take you back then to 1999, pregnant with your first child? How pregnant did you get before you had the caesarean? Were you full term?
Well, it's interesting. I don't know if anybody listening remembers the Millennium Bug.
Yes.
Which was, was a big threat, or so we were told, or potentially a big threat.
Yeah, and then it didn't happen and everyone was moaning. But the reason it didn't happen was because we prepared.
Isn't that weird? It's funny how things can be a bit better if you prepare for them.
Yes, strange, isn't it?
I'm glad you said that, because people do forget, and they don't always understand that what you say is true, that because we prepared, it
wasn't such a big thing. Yeah.
But it was a worry for those of us who were about to give birth. And I also worked at Radio 5 Live at the time doing a news and sports show. And obviously we were covering this and I was thinking, oh, God. Why, oh, why have I picked this time? It was of some concern to me. And our house was absolutely filled with bottled water, which we were all told we had to stock up on.
Oh,
yeah, it's all coming back to you, isn't it? So there was an atmosphere of faint panic, a distant rumble of panic
We really did think the world was going to end, didn't we?
Well, we thought it might.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was, by then, I'm 5'1". And I would say 5'1½", actually, because I was measured in an antenatal clinic.
It's important, that half. I knew it.
Bloody is when you haven't got many inches to play with. It was extremely important. I probably was my fighting weight. I'm trying to think about what I weigh now. I haven't weighed myself for a while, but I would imagine I'm probably sort of 9 stone-ish. I'm not big. I've never been skinny. I'm sort of just somewhere in the middle. And when I was, by this stage, in the December of 1999, I was well over 13 stone, which for me is big. It is big. And I do remember on one occasion, I actually fell over in the street in front of some workmen because I just couldn't balance properly. I was
like a weeble.
Yeah, I was like a weeble. I mean, I haven't got brilliant motor skills anyway. And it was deeply humiliating. I should say the baby was all right and I wasn't injured, but I did feel, it's one of those moments I wish I could take that one back and put it away somewhere. So I wasn't really in the best shape of my life. I mean, obviously you shouldn't be in the best, so-called best shape of your life when you're pregnant. But anyway, I also had, and have, presumably, although I haven't checked it lately, a bicornuate uterus.
And how did they find that out?
They found that out because I had a miscarriage in an earlier pregnancy.
Yeah.
And as anyone who's ever had a miscarriage knows, I always say, and I've said it on Woman's Hour quite a few times, the only people who underestimate a miscarriage are people who've never had a miscarriage.
Yes, very
it's
true.
Absolutely shit. And anyone who has been there will understand why I say that. And when I was having the miscarriage, I actually was admitted to Queen Charlotte's, and a very junior doctor, examined me with the, oh, what's that thing, the wand that they put into your, as far as they can get it up your vagina towards the cervix.
Oh, right. I don't know about the wand. I've only ever experienced the hand.
Okay.
At least I don't know. Maybe I have, and I don't remember. But
you might not remember. I think a wand is. Oh God! I mean, I'm testing my knowledge of obstetrics and gynaecology here. But anyway, the bloke said, and he didn't mean to say it to disturb me, but he did say something along the lines of, "I've never seen anything like this before."
Wow!
which actually, I think he was quite junior. So later in the day, a much more senior doctor came to see me, a woman actually, and said, look, I understand you were upset by what was said to you before. And of course I was upset because I was having a miscarriage.
Yes.
And it was my first pregnancy. And she was very sweet. And before she discharged me from the hospital, because you don't need to stay in hospital very long if you are having a miscarriage. On that occasion, I'd had a D&C, so I'd had one quite efficiently. And very fortunately, I think it's probably better to have a D&C than to go home and have a so-called natural miscarriage, which I have done as well, and which is, not fun. And she said, I want you to know that there is a chance that you will have children. Please don't think that you won't. But just to define bicornuate uterus, because I don't want to mislead people, and I'm very conscious of it's quite easy to do that. Can I just give you the Wikipedia definition of a bicornuate uterus? It's not that uncommon, by the way. A bicornuate uterus is a type of Mullerian anomaly in the human uterus where there is a deep indentation at the top of the uterus. And as you can, people can look it up just in case they're interested, but it isn't that uncommon. And it can, I'm choosing my words carefully here, it can cause miscarriages,
yeah.
But equally, it might not.
And you've had 2 children, which indicates that there is hope.
Yeah. I had no trouble at all getting pregnant. I had trouble staying pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
But that may very well have been, I ended up having 3 miscarriages, but that may very well have been because of my age. I had my eldest daughter when I was 35. So, there's all sorts of different reasons why miscarriage occurs, and I'm really anxious not to worry anybody or equally give anybody false hope, because this is such a difficult area, and I feel, because of my sort of woman's hour, wearing my woman's hour head, I do feel a responsibility to try and get the information accurate.
But as you say, it is really important to talk about it because they are really so sort of staggeringly demoralising and traumatising.
Yes.
And, yeah, and can happen for no reason at all as well as a reason.
Absolutely. I mean, there are cases where women have them at their so-called peak childbearing age, just completely out of the blue. And yes, of course. So that's why I just think the more we discuss it and the more we acknowledge the pain, I hope the easier it is for people going through it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I had a miscarriage and I found it, even though I was a bit ambiguous about being pregnant and that the actual physical side of it was, I would say, very, very minor, I found the hormones and the emotion of it horrific, absolutely horrific.
That crash is something like I cannot compare it to anything else.
No.
You're literally a beaten woman.
Yes.
And it's horrendous. It's absolutely horrendous. So I think if we don't acknowledge just how completely crap it is, then I think it's doing people, women, a real disservice.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I was treated actually at the miscarriage clinic at St Mary's in Paddington. And the women were in there who'd had 17.
It's just soul destroying. I actually do feel very, very lucky that I only had one.
Yeah.
But on a happier note,
yes,
even with your dented uterus, you have you've got pregnant and you are full term and you're
Well, I was, because that was what I was going to say in answer to your question about 2 or 3 days ago. It was thought better that I should have the baby by elective cesarean a week before her due date. Just to make sure that I didn't go into labour, because if I had, she was also a transverse lie. So
is that where they're just in the wrong position?
Yes, and that again may have been because of the shape of my uterus.
Right.
So she was lying across me, and which is not where you should be.
No. It's not ideal.
No. And it had got to the stage where Weebling Jane, I could actually feel, you could almost see her skull. I can still picture it now, sort of to
poking out your side.
It was sort of poking out of my right side. Yeah. And if you pressed, you know, you could feel the little human head.
It's quite weird, isn't it?
It was a bit weird. I mean, the whole business is weird. And that, never mind the pain of miscarriage, sometimes we just don't acknowledge just how weird it is.
It's badly designed.
Yeah, just to have another person. I mean, what is it? It's just very freaky. And we do need to talk about it more. So in that spirit, I was admitted to Queen Charlotte's Hospital, usual, you know, come at 7 in the morning.
Oh, for the triage.
For all the pubic hair shaving and everything else, which they offered back in 1999.
It's like being at a spa, really, isn't it?
Yes. If you've ever been in this is the old Queen Charlotte's Hospital in West London. So not the swish new one at nestling attractively next door to one with scrubs, but the previous one.
So more shorn like a sheep than in a spa.
A bit, yes, much more like a sheep. And all that happened very early in the morning on December the 17th, 1999. But long story short, I never had the baby. I didn't have the baby that day because I was, as an elective cesarean, you're bumped, you keep being bumped down the queue.
Oh, yes. And isn't it true that you're not allowed, is it nil by mouth? So you just get really thirsty and hungry.
I was allowed to suck or lick an ice cube from memory at about 3:30 in the afternoon.
That was nice of them.
Yeah, yes, it was. And I was, there's no feeling like it, lying there, knowing that your life is about to change in ways that you sort of think you might understand. But the truth is you don't really.
Nope.
And you can't have a drink. And you know how, I'd put on a lot of weight in pregnancy, partly because I was starving permanently. Mm. And also I love a cup of tea. And, you know, it was just, I don't know, it was one of the longer days of my life. And
you know, another person who this happened to told me that the reason that you're not allowed anything is simply because you might throw up in the delivery room. And we concluded that couldn't they just let you throw up? I mean, like, much worse stuff is coming out.
Well, I'm not a doctor. Is that really the reason?
Well, that's what she was told, because she did actually throw up, but it was just bile because she didn't have anything left.
That's nice, Beth. Thank you. Thank you very much.
There you go.
Oh. Although, if you can't take a bit of bile, don't become a parent. That's,
well, no,
that's,
I mean, there's
I'll
plenty
say.
Of vomit, isn't there?
There is. Okay, well, I don't know that. I was I enjoyed that suck of the ice cube, and but in the end was sent home at 7 o'clock that night.
Oh, that is so awful.
I know. But what was good about that was that I went back to my house and it was going to be the first grandchild in either of the two families. So the grandparents had all gathered to welcome this event. And my mum and my then mother-in-law were waiting back at the house and put together this huge pasta feast for this ravenous and still pregnant woman. And there is a picture of me, which I will not share. My closest friends have seen it because it makes them laugh at times of trouble. I am sitting wearing a Mothercare denim smock and eating what looks like a bucket of pasta.
But allowed to. They didn't say, oh, no, you still can't eat anything.
In the evening, I was allowed to eat as long as they waited. And then I had to stop at midnight. I think I ate up until about midnight from memory. I think it was midnight. Anyway, then went back to, because they were slightly embarrassed about the fact that I had been kept waiting all day. By the way, it's only ever for good reasons. There were some emergencies and I wasn't an emergency.
No.
They didn't really want me to go into labour, but I wasn't an emergency. Had I gone into labour, I think I might have become one. So, because she still wasn't in the right position. They were nowhere near it and couldn't be shifted. We laugh about this now, of course. It's
And also, it's really reassuring to know that you're not the emergency, that they're kind of bored by you, because that is the thing that makes you feel like it's fine.
Yeah, although I don't want to boast, but I think I was of moderate interest, and my placenta was taken away as part of a research project.
Oh, hang on, I want to come to that.
I'm a narcissist broadcaster, so we need to own these little moments where...
Feel the urge to narrate your caesarean as you went along, just in case, for posterity?
I should have done, although the bloke who did it, I think, had done Eleanor Aldroyd the month before, and Eleanor is a great friend of mine and a broadcaster on Five Live. And,
so he had experience of broadcasters.
He was a bit sort of sick of Five Live presenters. They were sort of like, we were all of the same sort of vintage, all had kids around the same time. So I think he was just, oh, God, here's another one. But, of course, even broadcasters are put things in perspective when they meet people who are actually really important, like doctors and nurses. So... No, I was. They were very, very kind to me, I think, actually, and eventually did. And they did the elective caesarean as a bit of a treat for me on a Saturday morning, which I don't think they would normally have done.
Abdominal
actually,
surgery
fair.
Is always a real treat, I find.
Yes. Well, I think it was just that because I think I'm right in saying I don't think they normally do electives on
Saturday morning.
Saturday morning. I'm
you
not
were
sure.
special.
I was always clinging to the fact that I might be special. And it was nearly Christmas as well, which was lovely. So we had Christmas carols playing in the operating
I had a
bit.
Christmas baby and did the same
did
thing. Yeah.
Oh.
Christmas carols to give birth to, which my mum said, won't that ruin Christmas carols for you? But it didn't.
No, well, did you had an elective caesarean as
no,
well?
No, it was a natural birth. But I thought, you know, it would be nice to listen to carols while I did it.
And
I
mean, were you really listening to the carols?
I mean, looking back, I don't really know what I was thinking, but it was a plan, I suppose. I don't really remember, you know.
No.
The holly and the ivy as I pushed him out.
Oh, God.
Hello, I'm Justin.
And I'm Lucy.
And together we are the hosts of Plenty Questions.
It's a very straightforward general knowledge quiz.
We ask you 20 questions, one after the other, 5 second gap in between, and you shout the answers out.
And then you tweet us to let us know how you've got on.
See if you can get 20 out of 20. No one has so far, but that's because we haven't started doing it yet.
But we will. And there's also going to be some fiendish brain teasers, so join us for
Plenty
Questions.
Questions.
No, you see, I feel... Is it, no, it was, you know, there's a bit of anguish about... and I try not to indulge in this. You're not... who am I to talk about childbirth when I've only... And the only is in speech marks there, had elective caesareans.
So many women have talked about this.
It's an interesting debate, isn't it? What do you think?
I gave birth naturally twice, and the second time was technically without pain relief. And there are loads of people who would say, oh, you know, you should be proud of you. I don't feel remotely proud of myself or pleased.
Don't you see? Why not?
I feel indifferent. Because I'd rather it hadn't hurt and that I hadn't done it at all.
What do you mean?
I don't feel any sense of pride or anything about... I would just... If somebody have said, right, you can just sort of fast forward and there'll be a click and we just knock you out and then it's all done, I would have chosen that because I just wanted no pain and no experience at all. So I don't feel... But lots of women have talked about how resentful they are that they feel that shred of, oh, you know, I only had a caesarean.
It is complicated, isn't it? And this is something else that isn't widely discussed. I don't really give in to the idea that I should feel embarrassed that I didn't give birth naturally, partly because I would regard that as a huge indulgence, especially after having miscarriages. To have two healthy children, I think you should shut up and just accept your great good fortune. Acknowledge.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
And move on. But I'm interested in some of the perceived differences between giving birth naturally and doing what I did. And of course, it's not without, you know, every time I get in the shower, the evidence of my caesareans is still there. It's not going anywhere. Every time you're in the bath, you see it, don't you? What do I think? Oh, God, you've got me thinking a bit now. Don't know.
I mean, I didn't want a caesarean because I was scared of it. But then, I mean, giving birth was, you know, it was just horrible, I think, generally.
How long did your labours go on for?
About 16 hours, something like that. They were both pretty speedy for...
What? Speedy?
Oh, I mean, I've talked to some people... I've had one guest whose birth lasted a week, a full week.
Yeah, okay.
So I felt like, you know, I escaped fairly lightly.
Yeah, I suppose you did. You see, that's the thing with elective caesareans. You go in, and once you're in the operating theatre, it is all over. You see you see your baby within, what is it? It's probably about 11 or 12 minutes.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It is amazing.
When they numbed you up, it's like a kind of epidural, isn't it?
Yes, the block in the back base of your spine. Yeah.
What did you feel when they cut into you? Do you feel anything? Somebody described it as rummaging around in a washing up bowl.
No, I know that's what people always say. To me, it honestly felt like somebody was going into my stomach and pulling a baby out. That is what it felt like. But it wasn't painful.
You couldn't see it though. Did you have a little kind of curtain
the screen
thing?
The screen's up, so you don't see a thing. I think there are some women who can now, or, you know, I'm sure I could have asked to see it, but I think it's probably quite troubling.
I wouldn't want to see it, but I mean...
I don't think I'd fancy seeing it. It's in my second birth, actually, interestingly, there were no men in the room apart from her dad.
Interesting.
And I think there was something very special about that for me.
Yeah.
And my anaesthetist was also pregnant. And I remember an overwhelming feeling of support in that room, actually. I still think about that. It was a really, and particularly because I'd a couple of the year before I'd had two miscarriages in one year, and obviously it's all in your records. And I think they were just really sweet to me in that birth. I remember thinking, oh, this feels really sisterly, and this is just really nice.
Yeah, I think when they're good, it's very easy to fall in love with your midwives. Yes. And anybody.
Yes.
Who's...
Well, I think you do that a bit.
Yeah.
And it also just, I know it sounds funny, but sort of murmuring words of encouragement to me, like, oh, you're doing really well here. And of course, I wasn't actually doing anything.
Well done, just, you.
Yeah, I was just sort of lying there. But it felt like a kind of obstetric pat on the head. Or I remember one of my first news editor in local radio, when he praised me, it just felt, I felt like a trillion dollars. And but this was an even better feeling, to be told by somebody in an operating theatre that I was doing really well.
Well, you're not freaking out, I guess, so that's good.
No, I suppose that's true. I wasn't. Yes. Yeah, I was immobilised on an operating theatre table.
I was going to ask you about that a moment, because what we've discussed in previous episodes is this potential, not always there, moment of euphoria when you give birth, when it slides out and you've done it. Mm. And whether you feel the same thing when the baby is sort of lifted out and it's done. Did you get that moment of euphoria? How did you feel at that moment?
Oh, I would say emphatically yes. And whenever people say, oh, being a woman is very difficult, and there are so many challenges, and yes, and there can be, even for those of us who've led very fortunate lives like me, have had moments where I've just thought it must be a hell of a lot easier to be a man. However, where we win is in those moments. Because they will never know. they can never know. And I'm speaking personally here, but of course, I think with my second daughter, that I just remember looking at her, thinking after the miscarriages and everything else, just thinking, that's it. I'm done. I'm complete. I'm complete. It's over. I just remember thinking, this is a bizarre set of thoughts, but those were the things going through my head, and immense gratitude.
Yes.
For a multitude of reasons, I think.
But I think I had the same thought the second time round, but I think it was tied up in, well, actually I didn't get it until I was sewn up, but it was tied up in, I never have to do that again, which I think felt very profound as a, you know, I never have to go through that horrific experience again. I'm done.
God. Oh, dear. No, I don't. You see, I can't. I sort of can relate to that, and I can't. I remember thinking, I totally get what you mean, in the sense that I knew then that I felt terribly blessed. Terribly is the wrong, but terribly blessed to have two children. And I did not. I knew I never wanted to go through the process again, because it's quite an effort to be pregnant, and to go through some of the indignities that are heaped upon you at that point, and to go through the after, you know, the months and the years afterwards. And I could not have had a third child.
No.
I just couldn't.
No. I kind of wanted one, maybe to get a girl, but I just couldn't have contemplated it again. It felt too much.
Yeah, I think if I'd had two boys, I'd have been just as happy as I am with two girls. So I never felt any. I'm one of two sisters, so to have two daughters myself felt. I think that also added to my idea of completion in a funny way.
I kind of only mean it in a sense of curiosity, and that I'd be interested to see how they turned out.
Yes. Well, my sister has two sons, so.
Oh, so you can see.
Yes, I can.
Helpful.
Got an idea. And there is. It is different. It is very different. Something I've wanted to do on Woman's Hour for a long time. Actually, we haven't got much time left to do it, so I'm going to have to do it. But squeeze it in between now and December. Is whether women's lives are very different, or how different they are when they grow up when they live in a male-dominated household.
Yes.
And I do think it's very different for my female friends and my sister, who are the only woman in a household of majority male.
Yeah. Household. I mean, we've got a female dog, and I honestly feel that makes a bit of a balance, because otherwise I think I'd feel very outnumbered.
I can see that, and I do think the dynamic is very, very different.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. Anyway, that's a topic for another day. That's your next podcast.
I'm interested, though, in you saying that, you know, women win by getting that moment of, you know, completion and euphoria. Do you really think, because my husband often says that he wants me to do, you know, a sort of male special of this podcast where I interview the dads, and I'm like, I don't care. I only want to interview the women, and he could do it himself. But I think he would maybe argue that at that moment, the dad does feel the same euphoria and maybe even heightened because it's not accompanied by terror and soreness and things
pain,
like that.
Mm. And bleeding. Yes.
Maybe it's better for them.
Well, we'll never know, will we?
No.
I suspect that it's not anywhere near the euphoric. And also, when you've had a caesarean, and particularly an elective, so I wasn't tired and exhausted because I hadn't been in labour for hours or days beforehand. I was basically fine. And you get this wonderful moment where you're if you're fortunate enough to have a healthy child, you're allowed to carry your child back to the, because you're put into maternal intensive care for a couple of hours after the operation. And you're wheeled back through the corridors of the hospital, and everyone stops you, has a look at the baby, congratulates you.
It's like a lap
wonderful.
Of honour.
It is like a lap of honour around the hospital. And you're filled with drugs, you're in no pain whatsoever, and you've produced this incredible human being. These are priceless, priceless moments. They don't go on for long. And from memory, about 2 hours after the caesarean, you start to feel the first pain.
And then it's downhill from there.
Oh, shit. I've actually just had abdominal surgery. Oh. And there's a bit, if a man, I always think I'd love to be a bloke who has his appendix out. Because presumably you're then allowed to lie around in bed listening to audiobooks and watching football on your tablet or whatever. Whereas a woman having had major abdominal surgery, like a caesarean section, you know, you're up half the night for the next sort of 3 or 4 years, and and you're expected to be a sort of 24-hour-a-day one-stop cafe for this sproglet. And I'd never had any sort of operation, apart from a D&C, actually, until I had a C-section. So, yeah.
I know, and they say when you've had a caesarean, you're not allowed to lift anything. It's like, I've always wondered, how is that possible?
Well, it's not, is it?
No.
I don't know quite why you can't drive for 6 weeks. That was always a bit of a... I don't really understand
that. I don't see that particularly. But not lifting just seems like something that is an impossibility.
Well, I tell you what does feel like an impossibility after a caesarean is going to the toilet.
Well, I mean, as someone who had a third degree tear, I can tell you it's not great either way.
I truly can't imagine actually what that's like. Well, maybe I can, because actually my daughter was born on December the 18th, as it turns out.
Have a Christmas poo?
To celebrate, I do. Yes, absolutely. Please, Beth, take this seriously. I was discharged from hospital because she didn't feed properly and, all the usual. I wasn't discharged until the 23rd of December of 1999.
Oh, that is cutting it fine.
It was a little bit, and I don't know why. And really, we clearly shouldn't have done this, but we had the family round for Christmas. Now,
right.
Fast forward to Christmas morning, where I am so constipated that I cannot.
Didn't they give you all the fibre gel? I had so much fibre gel.
Beth, the fibre gel was piling up in the hallway along with all the bottled water. But I still, as my late grandmother would have said, I still couldn't go. So on Christmas morning, and I'd also, in some sort of stupor, I mean, this is a podcast for people who are interested in this sort of thing.
Yeah,
so
we get
frank.
As graphic as
I can be frank,
possible.
Can't
yeah.
I? Okay.
Oh, absolutely.
I'd shoved a maternity pad down the toilet as well and blocked it. So
just to give you something else to deal with.
Yeah, just for something else. We needed an emergency plumber. And we needed, my poor dad had to go driving around London, not a city he knows, to try and find an emergency chemist to get more laxatives for me. It was, and I couldn't sort out breastfeeding either. I just, I remember my sister and I went up to my bedroom in the middle of the afternoon on Christmas Day and started fiddling about with a breast pump. Just, we just, I think I ended up crying or laughing or both. I can't remember what it was, but like I say, my daughter's nearly 21. We laugh about it now.
We have to laugh because otherwise we'd cry.
Yes. Well,
yes, yeah, I quite. Had a Christmas baby and I was in such pain that I could only stand. I couldn't sit down.
No. When was the baby born exactly?
He was born on the 19th.
Yes.
And on the 25th, I was standing in my brother-in-law's flat and I couldn't sit down. And I stood for 4 hours just standing.
Just standing up.
Sort of trying to bear it, thinking, this is not how I want to spend Christmas Day.
It's what the baby Jesus would have wanted, though.
Oh, yes, that's true.
I honestly think people need to, if you are trying to have a baby, but just think about it. If you're having lots of sex in, is it late March?
Yeah, it's kind of Easter time, isn't it?
Think about it. You know, think about it.
Yeah, yeah. But lots of people try to have their babies in September, so they start at Christmas and then maybe it just doesn't work and then it takes a while. That's what I always think.
Okay, yeah.
But as well as that advice, if you had to go back and give yourself a thorough talking to, what kind of thing would you say to yourself to make life easier?
About birth or about parenthood?
Birth, I think. This is quite focused on that moment.
I think... the birth. It was... I'll try not to heap any kind of idiotic expectation of perfection on yourself. But also, you can have faith and you should have faith in the professionals. I really do mean it when I say I had quite exemplary care before the birth at antenatal clinics. And I, by the way, I also went to everything. I was the sort of person who attended everything.
Oh, absolutely,
available.
Yes.
And I sought out additional advice and I also volunteered for a research project in my pregnancy.
Oh, yes, you said the placenta was taken away.
Yes, that's right. That's right. That's it. Because I'd had the miscarriage and I was very concerned about, as everybody is when they're pregnant, I signed up to a project where I had to go for a scan really very frequently. I think it was about every 2 weeks it might have been, or every 3 weeks. It was brilliant because I got to see her really regularly. And I really appreciated it. It meant that I could keep faith in the pregnancy, which if you've had a miscarriage, people will understand.
Yeah, you want constant reassurance all the time.
Yeah. And so because of that, they were interested in various things. So I think it was a research project to do with blood supply through the placenta. And anyway, whatever it was, I was really glad I'd signed up for it. And that meant that afterwards my placenta, her placenta, was taken away. Our placenta was taken away in a taxi as soon as she was born.
Only the best.
I did get to look at it as well. And that was...
It's like chopped liver, doesn't it?
Well, it's not one for Instagram, is it really? No, but everyone should... I suppose everyone should know. You can worry too much about the birth because your experience and mine are very, very different. Mm. But we were both fortunate in having healthy children. And on the whole, that's where the whole thing... how can I phrase this? They're here and you never want them to go anywhere. And bringing them up is a damn sight harder than giving birth to them, however the birth happens.
Yes, and it much more long-winded.
Yes, and birth is not the end of anything. It's the beginning of what's turned out to be quite a commitment in my case.
Parenthood, quite a commitment.
Yes. Well, exactly. But it's funny because it's not really, isn't it stupid how we don't really think it through in that way?
Oh, no, it's such a shock.
I suppose you wouldn't do it at all, would you, if you really thought about it?
No, it's true. And largely you forget a bit about the birth, which is probably helpful as well.
Yes. Yeah.
A kind of cushion. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think as well sometimes the after effects of a C-section shouldn't be underestimated. You do feel really quite ropey for quite some time afterwards. And again, I've nothing to compare it to, so I don't know about recovery rates in women who gave birth naturally, but I do know that I felt quite weak and quite debilitated for some time afterwards. Probably I wasn't fit enough. I'm probably fitter now, actually, than I was when I had the children.
Oh, yeah, I'm far fitter now than I was then. Yeah. But well, I think again, everybody's different and some people bounce back much quicker.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I was a wreck, but, you know.
A wreck?
Yeah, yeah. It just took me ages.
Psychologically or physically?
Both, I think. It took me ages to recover. Ages and ages, but
yeah,
you know.
I think you do have to be very kind to yourself. And I think another thing I feel strongly about is that you should be allowed to don't pay too much attention to the older generation. Choosing my words carefully here, but sometimes older relatives can chip in with their possibly well-intentioned advice, but you know, sod them.
Yes,
I've found that way
with advice. And I mean, I always ask my guests for a piece of advice at the end of the show, and what I do with that advice is I'm going to crowbar it all into a really badly scanning poem, and I'm going to send it to my local paper, who will refuse to print it because it's got the word vagina in it.
In other words,
I discard the advice, and it never sees the light of day because I think there is no advice in this show. It's only stories, and we all do it our own way.
I think you're absolutely right. I think advice is I'm all for information and honesty, but who am I to advise anyone? I got a lot wrong and some stuff right. And most of the stuff I got right was by pure fluke. the only thing I am absolutely fanatical about is immunisations.
Let us not accept any other viewpoint.
No, for God's sake.
I agree about that. That's the only piece of advice. Get all the injections.
Get them. Yes.
Well, thank you very much, Jane, for being such a wonderful guest and allowing us to peer up your baby portal so frankly.
it's a great pleasure, and I've got very much to look forward to. Somehow I make my living as a broadcaster. It's incredible, isn't it? What I've got to look forward to now in my life, I'm 56, so I'm just going to focus on being the most interfering and phenomenally over-informed grandmother.
That sounds marvellous.
Some point in the next decade, I hope that to be my role, which I'm looking forward to.
Isn't that your new radio show right there?
Interfering granny.
Yes.
I should say.
Sounds like a format.
I'm not close to that quite yet. My kids are horrified, but that's what I imagine. Yes, that's going to be my new show. That'll be it. Yes. Can't wait.
That sounds brilliant. Thank you for listening. Hope we didn't put you off this beautiful, life-enhancing rite of passage. See you next time.
GreatBigOwl.com.
If you're a fan of all things geeky, you're going to love Concessions, a brand new podcast by comedian Matt Hinton and myself, Beck Hill, where we interview your favourite cult heroes at Comic-Cons all across the world. We've got stars from Star Wars, Harry Potter, The Walking Dead, and more. Make sure you tune in soon to Con Sessions.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.